talks between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy. And we'll be reading today, beginning in text 183-184. No? That may be the other. Can we find it? Madhya 8, 183. There it is. All right. Yanra saubhagya guna vamche satya bhama. Yanra tani kala vilas shike vraja rama. Yanra sandaryadi guna vanche lakshmi parvati. Yanya pati vrata dharma vanche arundhati. Yanra saubhagya guna vanche satya bhama. Yamna tani kala vilas shike vraja rama. Yamna sandar yadi guna vanche lakshmi parvati. Yamna pati vrata dharma vanche arundhati. Someone try it? Yanra saubhagya guna vanche satya bhama. Yanra tani kala vilas shike vraja rama. Yanra sandaryadi guna vanche lakshmi parvati. Yamra pati vrata dharma bhamche arundhati. Yamra saubhagya guna bhamche satya bhama. Yamra tani kala vila shike vraja rama. Yanra sandar yadi guna vanche lakshmi parvati. Yanra pati vrata dharma vanche arundhati. Yanra saubhagya guna vanche satya bhama. Yanra tani kala vila shike vraja rama. Yanra sandaryadi guna vanche lakshmi parvati. Yanra pati vrata dharma vanche arundhati. So I'm going to read the word by word meanings myself. You can just read along, okay? Yanra, whose, saubhagya, of good fortune, guna, quality, vanche, desires, Satyabhama, one of the queens of Krishna, Yanra, tani, from whom, kala vilas, the 64 arts, shike, learn, vraja rama, all the gopis in Vrindavan, Yanra, whose, saundarya, adi, such as beauty, guna, qualities, vanche, desires, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, Parvati, the wife of Lord Shiva, Yanra, whose, pativrata, of chastity, dharma, principle, avanche, desires, Arundhati, the wife of Vasishta Muni. Yeah. Are we okay? Translation. So this is Ramananda Roy speaking to Lord Chaitanya. Even Satyabhama, one of the queens of Sri Krishna, desires the fortunate position and excellent qualities of Srimati Radharani. All the gopis learn the art of dressing from Srimati Radharani, and even the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and the wife of Lord Shiva, Parvati, desire her beauty and qualities. Indeed, Arundhati, the celebrated chaste wife of Vasishtha, also wants to imitate the chastity and religious principles of Srimati Radharani. I'll read the next verse myself. Yanra saguna ganane Krishna na paya para, tanra guna ganibe kemani jiva chara. Even Lord Krishna himself cannot reach the limit of the transcendental qualities of Srimati Radharani. How then can an insignificant living entity count them? Prabhu kahi jani lun Krishna radha prema tattva, sunite chahiye dunha vilas mahatattva. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, now I have come to understand the truth of the loving affairs between Radha and Krishna. Nonetheless, I still want to hear how both of them gloriously enjoy such love. Rai kahe, Krishna hoy dhira lalita, nirantara kama krida yanhara charita. Rai Ramananda replied, Lord Krishna is dhira lalita, for he can always keep his girlfriends in a subjugated state. Thus, his only business is enjoying sense gratification. Purport. We should always remember that Krishna's sense gratification is never to be compared to the sense gratification of the material world. As we have already explained, Krishna's sense gratification is just like gold. The perverted reflection of that sense gratification found in the material world is just like iron. The purport is that Krishna is not impersonal. He has all the desires that are manifest in the perverted reflection within this material world. However, the qualities are different. One is spiritual and the other is material. Just as there is a difference between life and death, there is a difference between spiritual sense gratification and material sense gratification. Om jnana timadandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmiditam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is a very esoteric part of Srila Prabhupada's books, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the chapter 8, the conversation between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya. But it's important Srila Prabhupada has translated it for us and explained it here. And since he has referred to this Lord Krishna's sense gratification just like gold and perverted sense gratification just like iron, I would like to read the part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that he's referring to here, which is in chapter 4 of the Adi Lila. This chapter is very important for understanding the relationship between Radha and Krishna, who Srimati Radharani is, and the stark difference between sense gratification and Krishna's pleasure pastimes. So in Adi Lila chapter 4, Krishna's Kaviraj is explaining Kama Prema, this is text 164, Kama Prema Donhakara Vibhina Lakam Lauha Arhema Joiche Sorupa Vilakam. Lust and love have different characteristics. So this is the difference between Kama and prema. Lust and love have different characteristics, just as iron and gold have different natures. Purport. One should try to discriminate between sexual love and pure love, for they belong to different categories with a gulf of difference between them. They're as different from one another as iron is from gold. And here's this famous verse which memorizing Prabhupada would quote. Atmandriya priti vancha tari bali kam. Krishnendriya priti icha dare prem nam. Translation. The desire to gratify one's own senses is kama or lust, but the desire to please the senses of Lord Krishna is prema or love. Purport. The revealed scriptures describe pure love as follows. Sarvata dvangsa rahitam satyapi dvangsa karine karane yadn bhava bandhanam yuno saprema padikirtita. If there is ample reason for the dissolution of a conjugal relationship, and yet such a dissolution does not take place, such a relationship of intimate love is called pure. The predominated gopis were bound to Krishna in such pure love. For them, there was no question of sexual love based on sense gratification. Their only engagement in life was to see Krishna happy in all respects, regardless of their own personal interests. They dedicated their souls only for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. There was not the slightest tinge of sexual love between the gopis and Krishna. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita asserts with authority that sexual love is a matter of personal sense enjoyment. All the regulative principles in the Vedas pertaining to desires for popularity, fatherhood, wealth, and so on, are different phases of sense gratification. Acts of sense gratification may be performed under the cover of public welfare, nationalism, religion, altruism, ethical codes, biblical codes, health directives, fruit of action, bashfulness, tolerance, personal comfort, liberation from material bondage, progress, family affection, or fear of social ostracism or legal punishment. But all these categories, and this is not a complete list, of course, all these categories are different subdivisions of one substance, sense gratification. All such good acts are performed basically for one's own sense gratification, for no one can sacrifice his personal interest while discharging these much advertised moral and religious principles. But above all this is a transcendental stage in which one feels himself to be only an eternal servitor of Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead. All acts performed in this sense of servitude are called pure love of God because they are performed for the absolute sense gratification of Sri Krishna. However, any act performed for the purpose of enjoying its fruits or results is an act of sense gratification. Such actions are visible sometimes in gross and sometimes in subtle forms. So this verse and its purport are important to understand, you know, to try to grasp the very difficult to understand relationship between Radha and Krishna, or Krishna and all of the gopis. And this chapter will proceed with Krishna's Kaviraj explaining the actual nature or position of Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani is the personification of love for Krishna. Right at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Mangala Charan, we find this verse, Radha Krishna Paniya Vikritir Labhani Shaktir Asmad. That what it means is Radha is a Krishna Paniya Vikritir, a transformation of the love for Krishna. This is explained in detail in this chapter. The chapter precedes an explanation of that verse largely. And known as the Labhani Shakti. Ladini Shakti. So what that means is that she is an expansion of Krishna. She's non-different from Krishna. She's the energy of Krishna, just like the sunshine and the sun. It doesn't make any sense to talk about the sun without the sunshine, nor can we understand anything about the sunshine without understanding the sun. So Krishna's like the sun, Radharani is like the sunshine in one sense. But this particular energy, Ladini Shakti, is his pleasure energy, meaning that she is the supreme worshiper of Krishna. That's why she's called Radha or Radhika. Perfectly suited in form and qualities and everything and activities for bringing Krishna pleasure. And in doing so, she herself experiences the highest pleasure. And we learn from the Chaitanya Charitamrita that it is for this reason that she experiences the highest pleasure, even higher than Krishna, because she's the servitor, that Krishna wanted to appear with the mood and complexion of Srimati Radharani, and that's the esoteric reason for the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this principle of Srimati Radharani, that her only reason for existence is to bring pleasure to Krishna, and therefore she decorates herself so nicely, she has all of these qualities, she engages in these pastimes, just focusing on the pastimes of Krishna, on the pleasure of Krishna. And what's so wonderful about it, because this is bhakti yoga, and bhakti yoga means reciprocation, that Krishna also, his purpose in life is to bring pleasure to Radharani. It's explained here. And therefore, when he sees her love and her beauty and so forth, he increases in his beauty and pleasure, and then she increases in her beauty because she's enlivened, that Krishna's enlivened by her beauty, and on it goes back and forth. It's just like two mirrors. You know, when you're a kid, you take two mirrors, and there's like infinite regress. It goes back and back like it. So this is what do we call an exponential multiplication of their love and their pleasure by seeing each other and engaging in each other. And that's why it's said that real spiritual pleasure and ananda is ever increasing and ever fresh. It never grows stale. Now, contrast that with kama. Kama is, as Srila Prabhupada explains so beautifully at the end of the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna asks, what is it that impels us to act in such a way, even sometimes against what we know to be good for us? You know? Atakena payukto hum papam chati purusha anichan abhivashanaya baladi vinayojita. Anichan, almost unwillingly sometimes, these material desires overtake us and we do things that we know are not good for us. This is Arjuna's question. And Krishna answers very clearly, it's kama, it's material desire. Kama, of course, means sex, but it means every other material desire as well. Mukti kami. There's a verse in Mukti kami, those who are lusting after liberation, if you will, very ardently desire their own liberation. The heck with anyone else. So this is what happens when being in the material world and the senses, the mind and intelligence get saturated with this kama. It completely covers our knowledge. Avritam gyanametena gyanino nityavaidina. This is our real enemy in this world. Arjuna standing on a battlefield between, in the no man's land, between the two armies, and he's looking at the enemies. But Krishna says, those aren't your real enemies. Your real enemy is this material desire that takes over the strategic places of our being, our senses, our mind, and intelligence, and in this way covers our knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of who we are. Knowledge of Krishna, certainly. What is this world? What is our place in it? You know? And what's the real goal of life? All of the things that Srila Prabhupada worked so hard to teach us through these revealed scriptures. So, and the result of that is that we act simply on the basis of kama and its concomitants. Because as soon as you get involved in kama, you must be involved in krodha, anger. Because kama is ever increasing and burns like fire. There's never an end to it, right? You enjoy something one time, and then there's a short satiation. Suppose it's chocolate. I like to give this example of chocolate. Most of us, I know as a kid, I mean, doesn't everyone get addicted to chocolate to some degree? So, all right, I mean, chocolate, M&M's. I mean, how many of you, have you ever gotten into M&M's? But a certain point, I can't eat one more M&M, right? That's it, I've had it, right? So, but, you know, there was a pleasure there. There's no doubt there's a pleasure there. And, you know, when the senses get, time passes, you know, then again, the very idea of the M&M, you know, it just causes you to salivate, right? Oh, yes, let's get some M&M's, right? And all the sense gratification is like that. You know, from time immemorial, we've been enjoying these different varieties of eating and sleeping and mating and defending. And Prabhupada gives this incredible list here. That's just probably from Bhaktisiddhanta's, you know. Subtle things, you know, biblical codes, ethical codes, all of these things. And what when you boil it down, it means that, oh, I want others to enjoy, right? I'm identifying vicariously with others' enjoyment, right? But ultimately, it's still within the realm of kama, you know? It's still within the realm of false ego, you know? And it's not at all spiritual, you know? It simply keeps us bound here. So the only solution to this, so Prabhupada explains in the purports there that this kama, desire for our own sense gratification, gross or subtle, is simply prema that has been transformed, if you will, or covered over and adulterated by contact with the modes of nature. When we somehow or other, and I don't want to get into this whole discussion of the fall of the jiva, but just this is quoting Prabhupada, somehow or other, we develop a desire because we have independence to compete with Krishna rather than to serve Krishna. And that's totally disruptive within the spiritual world. We can't stay there, you know? So we're given this place, material world, a fake Goloka Vrindavan, okay? Like Poundrika, a fake Krishna. So this is a place where we can pretend to be the enjoyer and the owner and the controller, you know. But each birth that we're in, we're defeated in that attempt. We want to enjoy, but we're frustrated, you know. And along with that enjoyment comes so much suffering. The anger, the danger, you know, the material body, which is ultimately subject to destruction and becomes a source of pain instead of a source of pleasure. Every birth, you know, what to speak of the human birth. So we come to the human birth, but we still have all of that history of trying to enjoy separately. So that's all we know. So we do it in a more elaborate way, a more involved way. But it's the same old karma in controlling us. So the process of devotional service is to somehow or other, you know, it's difficult. Prabhupada is very difficult once it turns into karma to turn it again to prema. But that's what we're trying to do. That same desire for pleasure has to be directed toward Krishna's pleasure. That's the definition of pure bhakti, which is what this movement is all about. Nothing less. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnanakarma dinavatam anukulena krishnanushilanam bhaktir uttama. This is the key verse near the beginning of the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, defining the gold standard of devotional service. Not mixed with any kind of material desire for sense gratification or liberation, which is like that. So what this verse says is that those activities which are simply geared toward favorably serving Krishna for his pleasure, without being covered, with no other motivation mixed in, jnana karma karmadi, and anavrata means covered or adulterated. Jnana means desire for liberation, and karma means desire for food of enjoying the fruits of our labor. That's pure devotion. Now, who perfectly personifies that? Srimati Radharani. Now, a wonderful section, when you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita all the way through and you get to the last chapter of the Anjali-lila, you'll find the Shikshastika, right, near the end. And then he gives a summary of the whole book. But before that is the Shikshastika. And the last verse of the Shikshastika, you know, perfectly personifies Srimati Radharani. This is spoken by Lord Chaitanya, written by him, but it perfectly expresses Srimati Radharani's mood. Ashrishya va pararatam panashtumam adarshanan marmahatam karotu va yata tata va vadadhatu lampato mat prananatas tu seheva napara. Now before we give the translation of this, remember this verse at the beginning of the purport. If there is ample reason for the dissolution of a conjugal relationship and yet such a dissolution does not take place, such a relationship of intimate love is pure. That's pure love. So now here's the translation to the verse. Forgive me, I'm going to give my little poetic version of it. Let Madhava embrace this maid who's fallen at his feet. Or let him trample me or my most ardent hopes defeat by never giving me a chance to see him anywhere, thus shattering my heart and plunging me into despair. but I'm trying to mean despair. I forget. He is a reckless libertine and not a saint. He is a reckless libertine and not a saint. So let him act in any way he likes without restraint. Yet though his cruel and crooked ways may cause me constant woe, Krishna is the only Lord my heart shall ever know. And then Lord Chaitanya himself gives a purport to this verse. And one of the verses, one of the famous verses there is that Srimati Radharani says, if Krishna wants to be with another gopi, you see, then I'll go to that gopi and fall at her feet and take her hand and bring her to Krishna. You see? And that will be my greatest pleasure. In other words, there's not a tinge of envy there. Now, this may be puzzling. This is very difficult to understand because we know there's so many pastimes where Radharani becomes angry at, you know, Chandravali, or becomes angry at Krishna because he was with some other gopi, right? So how does that comport with this verse where she says, I'll go and take her hand and bring her to Krishna? Well, the idea is that if Krishna wants to be with the other gopi, that is his desire, then I'll do it. But Krishna also, part of the pleasure of these pastimes, and they're very intricate, subtle, is that he likes to see Radharani mad, angry at him, jealous, you know, and then to resolve that in another meeting. This is part of the whole rasa, right? And we know that from the talks between Rukmini and Krishna. Remember that chapter in the Krishna book? He wanted to see Rukmini get into that mood of Radharani. She's not in the mood. She's more in the mood of very submissive, you know. And so she's always fanning. So when Krishna spoke to her that way, she fainted. You know, I actually don't care for my wives. You know, you should marry somebody else. You know, this is like a thunderbolt. You know, he wanted her to become angry and said, what are you saying? You know? So instead she faints. So then he apologizes. Oh, I didn't mean it. You know, and then she gets into the mood. And then she actually reciprocates with him. She, you know, she changes her nature a little bit and she responds to everything he said. But so this is all part of, you know, the churning. So you shouldn't get bewildered by that. So in the that purport, this idea is expressed wonderfully, is that I have no separate desires. My only desire is to please Krishna, whatever he wants. You know, if he wants to ignore me, this is why. Now think of this: even though Krishna left the gopis, right? He went to Vrindavan, promised to come back. You know. Didn't come back right away, then went to Dwarka. They're pining away in Vrindavan for decades, right? And you read about it, it's heartrending. You know, read the Hansa Duda. The Hansa Duda was written by Rupa Goswami. I read it was written before he met Lord Chaitanya. He was a devotee before that. But it's all about, Hansa Duda means a swan letter. A swan letter. So the scene is at the beginning of this Hansa Duda, is that Radharani has fainted on the bank of the Yamuna in separation from Krishna. Krishna's in Mathura. And she, you know, her friends are around her, they're fanning her, they're trying to revive her. You know, it's a heartrending scene. So Lalita, you know, takes a little break and looks at, and she sees this swan flying beautifully over the Yamuna's waves, you know. So just like Radharani saw the bee as a messenger from Krishna, she, in her madness, she's seeing this swan as a messenger from Krishna. Or as someone who can take a message to Krishna. And so she starts describing Radharani's symptoms of agony and separation of the Krishna. You take this, you know, the whole book is like that. This letter describing Radharani's separation. And then, you know, the question is, well, where's the Ananda? You know? The tears are flowing, she's beating her, you know, head, you know, she's fainting in misery, you know. I thought this was supposed to be bliss. Where is it? So this is because we're, you know, we don't know really what's going on. And the same thing with Lord Chaitanya. You know, he's in the Gambira, and he's in separation from Krishna, in the mood of Radharani. He's crying constantly, and he's rubbing his face against the wall till blood comes. You know, if you just read that, you say, oh, I don't want to be part of this movement. Let me go do some hatha yoga. You know what I'm saying? This is because this is way beyond, you know, I have to start with, you know, the chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita. But the point is that although it's very difficult to understand, this is the greatest pleasure that can be experienced, this love and separation. Now, why is that? Because bliss we experience or happiness we experience in Krishna consciousness, which is spiritual pleasure, comes from the absorption in Krishna and the intensity of the emotion in wanting to serve Krishna. Those are the two things, you know. So no one can be more absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, and no one can have a greater desire, intensity of desire to serve Krishna. And it doesn't mean that he has to be in front of you. In fact, we find that the gopis are exalted greater than even the queens of Dwarka. The queens are expansions from Radharani. This is explained in this chapter 4 also. That all of the other gopis and all of the queens in Dwarka and all of the Lakshmis, they're all simply expansions from Srimati Radharani. Just like all of the other avatars of Krishna, they're expansions. All the Vishnu forms, Matsya, Rama, and Nrisimha, we know that they're non-different from Krishna. They display a certain percentage of his powers for their particular function, whatever they're doing, right? But they're not different from Krishna. Krishna is the avatari. He's not an actual avatar. He's the source of all avatars. Similarly, Srimati Radharani is the source of all of these other gopis. And why? Why are there so many gopis? To increase, you know, Krishna's pleasure. It increases. The rasa dance is, you know, there's many, many gopis, and Radharani is also there. And then she leaves. And all, and then Krishna leaves also, you know, because she's the crown jewel, you know. But eventually they all find him and they all have a rasa dance together. So all of these different gopis, they perform different functions in giving pleasure to Krishna. Now, did you ever wonder why You know, I mean, here you have all of these gopas, right? Friends of Krishna. That's another rasa. They're enjoying with him in the forest. As friends, you know, sometimes riding on his back, you know, sometimes teasing him and joking with him. And he covers his opulence to evoke that mood, so that mood can be enjoyed. And then you have all of these thousands of gopis, right? Now, but you never hear anything about so-and-so gopi hooking up with so-and-so gopa. Right? Never. Always Krishna's in the center. Krishna's in the center. Now, it's true that, you know, there are families, there are old elder gopis and gopas, and they have, you know, children who play with Krishna. I mean, there's family life there. But when you're talking about Krishna's, you know, Leela with his friends and his gopis, there's no hint that they're pairing off. Krishna's in the center. He's the hero. And everyone is... Sometimes there are certain coward friends who will take letters from the gopis. They also participate. They know that's going on, you know. But they're not competing with Krishna at all in that rasa. So this is the spiritual world. Whereas, look at the material world, you know. Now, there's a perverted reflection. I've thought about this. How can we understand the great pleasure that the gopis feel, the sakis feel, the manjuris feel, you know, just in like, you know, grinding the kumkum and, you know, and all of the different paraphernalia so that they'll, you know, to enhance their conjugal relationship, you know? Is there anything in the material world that's the reflection of that, you know? And I was thinking, I may be wrong about this and you can correct me, but as a child, maybe those of us who came from, and I have to say this, from intact families where the mother and father were nicely together and they loved each other, you know, and you're growing up with that. Well, we know how traumatic it is when they break up, right? If there's enmity between the mother and father, then that it deeply affects a child. It scars emotionally, isn't it? A child. I didn't come from such a home, but I know that that's a fact. Broken homes are, you know, very common, and it's disaster for the children. So conversely, when there is a show of affection, when you see the mother and the father in a very nice relationship, that's very pleasing for the child, right? And you like that. In other words, you're not directly experiencing that relation, but you're, if you were, bathing in the love of those who you love. You see that? So similarly, if you love Krishna, you know, and Srimati Radharani, and you're appreciating their beauties and their qualities, then you'll also appreciate how much they love each other, you know? And that itself will give you pleasure, you know? It's because we're part and parcel of Krishna, and we're part of the Ladini Shakti, in this fourth chapter, these three energies are described, the internal, external, and marginal. We're the marginal or Tatastha Shakti. We can either be controlled or focus on the internal energy, meaning service to Krishna and stay in the spiritual world, or we, you know, turn away from that and we come here and then we're completely focused in the material energy, our own bodies, bodies of others, you know, those things, this material energy. So within that internal energy, there is the Ladini Shakti, which I explained, Srimati Radharani, pleasure energy, which expands into all the other, you know, elements that give Krishna pleasure. There's the Sandini Shakti, which is the existence potency, overseen by Balaram. Did you know that everything in this temple is an expansion of Balaram? Everything that is here for the pleasure of Krishna, the singasans, the fans, all these things, that Balaram, because he's in charge of the Sandini Shakti, the things, if you will, in the spiritual world, you know, for Krishna's pleasure, that is an expansion of Balaram. That's why we shouldn't actually lean against the wall, you know, this is Balaram. Well, he's so merciful, he lets us walk on the floor because we have to. How else are we going to get to see Krishna? But when it's not necessary for Krishna's pleasure, we're just doing it for our own, like, you know, leaning against the wall, you know, take it easy and take in the scene. That's not good. That's an offense. There's all of these subtle things. And then there's the Samvit Shakti, the knowledge potency, you know, how we understand, how all the residents of the spiritual world understand what's going on, experiencing the Leela, the knowledge, what's happening. So we're part and parcel of the Ladini Shakti. We have that. When we direct it toward this world, that becomes sense gratification. And the Ladini Shakti then causes great pain, suffering. Krishna says, sense gratification, the pleasure you experience is the source of your suffering. Yehi samsparjita boga dukayona evate. You see? That the samsparjita boga means born of contact of the senses with the sense objects. That's the source of sense pleasure. And it can be subtle also, you know? But that pleasure you experience, that's the source of your pain. You know? So now what are we going to do? You know, if you explain, how can I enjoy in this world? Well, the only way to enjoy is by spiritualizing it. In other words, the pleasure that the companion verse to that is bias barsheshu asaktatma vindityatma diyatsukam. Sab brahma yoga yuttatma sukamakshayamashchate. Those who are intelligent, they minimize the sense gratification. You see? They bias barsheshu means external sense gratification. Asaktatma, not attractive. Vindityatma diyatsukam. They're enjoying the pleasure within by brahma sparsha. Sab brahma yoga yuktatma sukamakshayamashchate. And they enjoy a happiness that doesn't break. That's spiritual. Any happiness that has a beginning and an end, Krishna says, that's material. Well, where do you find it? You know, in this world. Eating, sex pleasure, some kind of a concert you go to, or something, you read a poem, you know? It all has a beginning and an end. You know, you can only do it so long, and then it's over. And it becomes stale, and you try to do it in some other variety. And we've been doing that for millions of births. But spiritual pleasure has no end. Because Krishna is, if he's God, then it means that he can enjoy unlimitedly. Right? So now, here's another a little syllogism from Jiva Goswami. Oh, I forget the Sanskrit now. Oh, whatever. Yeah, I forget it. But it says, basically, Parama Purusha Sukat Vatma Svasukatvam. This is the idea. That when one's happiness is simply in the happiness of the Supreme Person, you see, then one is situated in pure devotional service. And because Krishna's ability to enjoy is unlimited, when our happiness is in his happiness, our ability to enjoy also becomes unlimited. Now it's completely limited because we're materially absorbed. So this is Srimati Radharani experiences that. You know, her happiness is unlimited. She's always enjoying in relation to Krishna, even in separation. So this is the section that we're in now. You're reading from the eighth chapter. And it more or less summarizes, you know, the final Siddhanta of the Gaudiya Vaishnava, which is that, you know, the pure devotional service to Radha and Krishna, which is the Supreme Personality of God in his most attractive, most sweet form, and his consort who reflects all of that attractiveness. That is the highest level that a living entity can achieve. You know, even more intense and unlimited happiness than worship of Lakshmi Narayan. What to speak of, you know, anything below that, impersonal liberation, sense gratification, doesn't even compare. So that was Lord Chaitanya, he came to teach that. You know, the final goal, and you see, as you've read already in these conversations, he's bringing it all out from Ramananda Roy, you know, starting with, you know, what's the ultimate goal of life, how to achieve it, and then, you know, Ramananda Roy gives answers on and on and on, Lord Chaitanya, that's external, 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 and finally says, good, you know, Gyane Priyasam Udapasinamam Deva, you know, simply give up everything and simply hear from the pure devotees about Krishna's pastimes and instructions. And in that way, if you perfect it, you'll conquer Krishna. How do you conquer Krishna? By love. I just heard a lecture this morning by Prabhupada. You know, he's saying the impersonalists, you know, they want to be God, you know? And the devotees say, why? You know, we don't want to be God. We want to conquer God. And, you know, then he described, well, who conquered God? Mother Yashoda, right? How did she bind him up? He's the Supreme Isha, Isha Padma Krishna, you know? And at first she couldn't, right? But then Krishna, he took mercy, you know, as she's perspiring, flowers are falling from her hair, her friends are laughing at her. And he says, okay. So he allows himself to be bound up because of the intense love. Krishna responds to that. He says to Durvasa, says, I'm not independent. Aham bhakta paradino yasvatantra hiva dvija. Sadhubir grasta vidyo bhakta bhakta jadapriya. Says, I'm not independent. Durvasa said, please remove your chakra. You know, it's burning. He says, I can't. What do you mean you can't? He says, I'm not independent. I'm controlled by the sadhus, the pure devotees. And even the devotees of my devotees are dear to me. Yeah, and they, you know, like that. So, of course, controlling Krishna means becoming completely subordinate to Krishna. This is the paradox, is that by complete surrender to Krishna in love, Krishna becomes respondent to that love, you know? I mean, just look at Prabhupada's life. You know, how is it possible, you know, that this elderly gentleman, you know, Bengali gentleman, was able to come to America and do all that he did? Because Krishna fulfilled his desire. He wanted so ardently to preach, to serve Krishna in that way, in Lord Chaitanya, that, you know, I mean, the doctors were amazed, you know, that the first time in 67 when he went in for the, he had a stroke, you know, and he said, there's no, you know, this man, he's 69 years old, 70, you know, he's going to be, if he survives this, he'll be crippled the rest of his life, you know. And by, you remember what happened, all the devotees in the movement, maybe 100 of them, max, you know, there's some on the West Coast, some on the, in 72nd Avenue, all praying and chanting all night, you know, ardently desiring for the, you know, spiritual master to survive, playing the Sringadev, you know, and came out of that, you know. And, you know, he wasn't jumping up and down on the dais so much anymore, like he had been doing. But he was vigorous beyond everything we could imagine, and he did all he did in the next 12 years. He's directly empowered by Krishna. Krishna responded to his desire to preach. So this is what we're reading here. This Dira Lalita is a quality of Krishna's. You know, I'm just going to read this a second. I looked it up in the Nectar of Devotion. What is the quality of Dira Lalita? A person is called Dira Lalita if he is naturally very funny, always in full youthfulness, expert in joking, and free from all anxieties. Such a Dira Lalita personality is generally found to be domesticated and very submissive to his lover. So Krishna sometimes he exhibited that, and sometimes we read his others, Dira Datta, you know, in which he's, you know, he ignores Radharani, or he doesn't come to the place, and she gets angry, and all of these different things. So it's like mixing, you know, a very special nectar drink, you know, with all the different, a little camphor here. I used to make the nectar in Miami, nectar drink for the Sunday feast. You know, we get all these mangoes, and you know, you mix them all together, you put in some sugar, you put in a little coconut juice, you know, like that. So they're constantly doing that, mixing the different moods, you know, and it's never the same. It's never stale. It's never become satiated. It's always ever fresh. So this is where we belong. And if there are any questions or comments, we can entertain them now. And then we have a very special ashtaka that I'd like to share with you that we can sing together. This is from the Govinda Lilamrita. It's a prayer by the Shari, the female parrot, for service to Srimati Radharani's lotus feet, which I think would be appropriate. Mother Lakshmi Moni, let us get the mic over there.
Just a simple question. I wonder if there is a difference between Krishna consciousness and Krishna consciousness.
Between Icha and Kama.
Icha and Kama. Oh boy, this is an etymological question. You know, all I can say is that, let's see.
Seems like
Icha Dvesha Samutena. You know, we have. I'm just thinking of the context. Kama seems to be broader. Kama, you know, kama generally says, "Oh, this is lust." You know, this is translated as lust. But we know that it could be much broader than that, as we've just read, and we read also in the verse by Lord Chaitanya, where I think it's the teaching to Sanatan, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama. Ateva Shanta. A bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. Which means that the devotees of Krishna, pure devotees of Krishna, are completely peaceful, you know, because they don't want anything for themselves. And then he gives a category of those who are not peaceful. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami. So those who want ordinary sense, those are bhukti kamis, but those who want their liberation. That's also the kamis. In other words, that's a species of material desire, personal desire. And siddhis, You can also ardently desire, you know, perfections of yoga. So, I don't know if you would want Ichha so much with that. You know, Ichha is a more pedestrian word for desire. Ichha Dvesha Samutena. Now this is, you brought up the word Ichha. So, this is used, this verse in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada uses to describe how he came to the material world. You know, devotees sometimes ask, well, how could we leave there, right? We were immersed in Ananda, serving Krishna, right? And why would we ever leave? Well, Prabhupada used this verse. They say, well, it's there in the Shastra. So, Ichha Dvesha Samutena Dvandva Mohena Bharata Sarvabhutani Samoham Sarge Yanti Padantava. Sarge means to enter into the creation. So that's like coming. So, Ichha Dvesha Samutena. So, Ichha means I desire to enjoy pleasure like Krishna. And Dvesha means I'm envious toward Krishna. I don't want to serve him anymore. You see? And from that is born the delusion of duality. Ichha Dvesha Samutena Dvandva Mohena. So, the Dvandva Moha. The delusion, this is good, this is bad, this is different from Krishna, this whole world, it doesn't have anything to do with Krishna, that's called dvandva. So from that bewilderment, sarvabhutani sammoham, all living entities in this world are bewildered, and they enter into the material creation. So I'll look it up when I have time, and see some of the nuances of difference. We'll deal with that. Ragatmaka has a question.
The perverted Madhurya Ras in the material world, the union of the two partners begets offspring.
Yeah.
I'm questioning what would you say the quote unquote offspring of the union of Radha and Krishna is?
Well. In other words, if that's the perverted reflection, what is the perverted reflection of? Is that what you're asking? In other words, just everything in this world is a reflection of what's in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
Well, there's no children that are produced, and that's not part of the rasa. I mean, that's part of another variety of conjugal rasa. And by the way, you know, this is part of Prabhupada's use of the English language, which we have in ISKCON, which really isn't out there. The word conjugal, which we all thought we knew what it meant, you know, for all these years, actually does not mean sex desire. That's another word. Conjugal only refers, in the outside world, to the relationships between married couples. That's it. And, you know, even though etymologically it looks like conjugation, you know. But anyway, we know what you mean. So there's a variety of mood or rasa which Krishna enjoys in Dwarka, in which there are offspring. He has 11 children actually, 10 sons and one daughter by each of those queens. And so that's certainly a rasa, a family man and you know, playing with children on your lap and all of these things, and it's described there in the Dwarka Lila. But in Vrindavan, this Parakiya Ras, you know, the relation, the amorous, let's call it amorous love, is more intense because it's illicit, you know, it's hidden, you know, you're stealing a kiss, you know, that thing, you know, that intensity. And we know that the highest there is the lowest here. So that here causes so much pain, you know, it breaks up families and STDs and all of this stuff and abortion and horror, you know. Even though it's exalted by the so-called culture, right? It's all this illicit connection and that's really exalted. Yeah, there are no children per se, but there is the production of the highest levels of ecstasy. And that other rasa is there in other part of Goloka, in Dwarka.
That's so you could say expanding rasa. Is the
yes, rasa. That is the fruit, and it's ever expanding. Okay, we just have 5 minutes or so before 9, and we can just enough time to do our. Do you have it? This is a song sung by, as I mentioned, the female parrot in Govinda Lilamrita. It's an ashtaka, right within the larger chapter, I forget which chapter it's in, the Shuka has a song to Krishna, and the Shari has a song to Radharani. And if you will permit me, that's it, you have it? Okay, very good. I just gave one of the Sanskrit, and we can do the English. I put it into English poem. Oh, ideally. But I guess it didn't come out, huh? Oh, there we go. Is it okay now? Yeah. We need a better projector that has a higher illumination. You can. Okay. So it's a very simple meter, you know. And if you want, you can try to chant along for the Sanskrit, and then we can chant together, but especially that last line, may Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. We'll all come in on that one. Kunkamakta kanchanam jagava hari gorabha pitanamchitamja ganda kirti nindi sorabha bollavesha suna sava vanchitarta sadika maya matma para padma dasya dastu radika. Her gold complexion steals the pride of golden lotus tinged with red. Her fragrance mocks the scent of lotus bloom with saffron powder spread. Her skill in satisfying Sri Hari is perfect and complete. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Her wondrous silken garments shame the splendor rubies can display. She is a blooming garden where the bee of Krishna loves to play. She worships Surya every day so she and Madhava can meet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Eclipsed by Radha's tenderness, the fame of budding blossoms dims. The moon, the lotus, sandal paste, and camphor serve her cooling limbs. When Krishna burns with love's desires, her soothing touch dispels the heat. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Though youthful goddesses adored by all adore the goddess Shri, she lacks Sri Radha's beauty, youth, and every other quality. So when it comes to lovers' sports with Radha, no one can compete. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. In arts like dancing, singing, joking, Radha is by far the best. She shines with countless traits divine, like love and gorgeous form and dress. Among the famous gopis of Vrindavan, she's supremely sweet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Eternal pastimes, beauty, youth, and love for Krishna make her rich. The loving gopis tremble just to see that love at highest pitch. Her meditation on Sri Krishna's form and pastimes is complete. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Perspiring, trembling hairs on end and crying, faltering of the voice. Impatience, joy, and guile, these signs of rapture make her friends rejoice. For Krishna's eyes, these many gem-like ecstasies provide a treat. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Apart from Krishna for a moment, Radha feels anxiety and restlessness and other moods, the highest kind of ecstasy. But when she meets him with some effort, all her sufferings retreat. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Exalted goddesses like Parvati can hardly ever see. She Krishna's lover Radhika, but if a humble devotee recites these verses, then she Radha, who enjoys with Sri Hari, will pour the nectar of her service down on him eternally. Will pour the nectar of her service down on him eternally. Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Anyone wants this poem or any other literature I can send it to you, just write to dravida108@gmail.com. I think you can remember it, okay?